Hello, and welcome to another weekly edition of Popcorn Optional, a movie podcast where we talk all things movies, and this week we are reviewing the newest video game turned movie in Tomb Raider, starring Alicia Vikander and a whole host of other sorts of people. My name is Cameron Salina, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Trevor Allison. Let's go ahead and just get into our review. We're going to do things a little bit differently this week and just kind of do a review, keep it short, concise, and just give you our thoughts on Tomb Raider. So, first of all, let's kind of contextualize this conversation. There have been a lot of video game movies that have come out in the past, and a lot of them have failed. Maybe not commercially, but at least critically. I don't feel like there's ever really been a great video game movie. If you look at Rotten Tomatoes rankings, the best video game movie of all time is Tomb Raider at 50%, which isn't saying much, and in second place is Prince of Persia at 36%. There's a couple of issues with video games turned movies. One of the big ones being that it so often feels like you must have a pre-existing knowledge of the source material in order to understand the movie. When I saw Warcraft a couple of years ago, which was directed by Duncan Jones, I was really excited because, you know, Duncan Jones is a fantastic director. He had done Moon and Source Code before this. And then, you know, we get to Warcraft and it's being called, as or at least advertised as, the new Lord of the Rings. And so I'm all in. And I go to the movie and there's so many different things that it's like, I've never played Warcraft before. And I feel like because of that, I'm almost being looked down upon because I just don't understand. I'm in the minority of people who actually saw Warcraft and have played the video game. I get it. But at the same time, a movie should be able to stand on its own without having to rely on knowledge from the source material. One of the other things that I feel like is a hindrance to a lot of different video game movies is that so often they don't focus on the characters and they're just so focused on giving us action to keep us with the pace of a video game. I mean, so often the cutscenes. And so let's get into our general thoughts of Tomb Raider as a film.
Tomb Raider, I really liked it. I was a little skeptical going in after seeing the reviews and everything, but this was a good, fun movie. Alicia Vikander is great. There's a few plot holes, a few issues, a few small things. There's a few things that I think could have been done a little bit better that would have added a little bit more emotion and intrigue to this film. But I think it's a good, fun film. It's good escapist popcorn movie cinema. You go in there, you forget about everything. It kind of brings you in. It's a fun little ride. It's paced pretty well. And I think it sets up, which it seems like they're trying to set up a series with these. And I think it's something that can work. I look forward to kind of seeing where this goes.
Yeah, I'm with you. This movie wasn't great to me, but it wasn't bad. It was one of those movies that's in the middle that if I had seen it and it was on TNT or TBS or something like that, I wouldn't, you know, skip past it. It's kind of one of those things that you're like, oh, yeah, I like that movie. That was fun. It's not like 2012 where you're like, gosh, that's a terrible movie. Why would anybody ever make that? It's fun. It's enjoyable. And, you know, the biggest part that's great about this film is the fact that they have Alicia Vikander playing the lead role. She's just amazing in this movie. She's fantastic from beginning to end. She's energetic. She's emotional. She's incredibly physical in this role, like you would expect the character to be from the video games. She just does a great job of portraying this character. And, you know, I'm excited. And hopefully they're able to make new films. I feel like this is very much like the prequel to a much larger universe. And not universe. Hopefully they're not giving us like a movie of her dad. I mean, like, hopefully this is a franchise where Alicia Vikander is able to kind of show off what she's been doing up until like able to show off what she can really do in this role. There's some problems with the story that are kind of flat. There's some problems with a couple of other things. There's some characters that don't need to be there. But the action scenes are great. And this movie's overall is pretty fun. I mean, it's a fun ride beginning to end. It sits at an hour and 58 minutes, but doesn't feel that whatsoever. It feels incredibly tight as far as the action goes. And yeah, there's those exposition dumps, but yeah, it's a fun movie. But in order to talk about this movie fully, we have to kind of get into spoilers, and one of my biggest problems with this movie is a spoiler, and so I want to get into that. If you haven't seen it, it's a fun movie. It's worth your time. It's out in theaters now. There's a great lead character in Alicia Vikander playing Lara Croft. So go see that. It's worth it. But let's go ahead and get into spoilers. And my biggest problem with this film is that, you know, Alicia Vikander is not given much to do in this story. The movie suffers from this bland story where nothing really happens. It's like exposition dump, action scene. Exposition dump, action scene. Send you to this place, action scene. Send you to this new place, action scene. Small emotional moment, action scene. And that's the entire movie. It's just action scene after exposition dump after transition scene. There's no story here. The movie doesn't stand on its own as far as movies go. It's just kind of this, like, in a sense, video game-esque movie that doesn't give you any character development and just kind of goes on the assumption that you care about these characters already.
What if Roar Othog did that on purpose and wanted it to feel like the pacing of a video game?
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, that's...
but it, because there are definitely
the pacing
some...
of a video game, and that's the problem with so many video games movies, is the pacing of a video game doesn't work for the pacing
right.
of a movie.
There are definitely some shots in this. I mean, to not get off too far, but there are definitely some shots in this that feel like they're video game shots, and it feels pretty intentional, where you get kind of the over the shoulder stuff and the third person, like kind of semi close up action feels like a video game. And I think to get to your larger point of story, there's kind of the bones of a good story here. It just is too shallow, which is kind of weird to say for a movie that does hit a full 2 hours, or just about. But I think there are some times where the action sequences could have been cut a little bit shorter in a few places to kind of give us some more time with some characters to kind of deliver the more emotional impacts.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest problem is, you know, the emotional impact of this movie and our connection to this character is supposedly so much drawn from her connection to her dad, who, spoiler, leaves early in the movie to go on this trip to find the hidden tomb of Himiko, really to prevent this evil organization from finding it. And then what ends up happening is he is never found. He goes missing. And Alicia Vikander turns to, like, doesn't want any of that life, and then goes on this journey. And then she ends up going to this island and figuring out that he's alive. And all of our emotional impact and connection to this movie is meant to be drawn off of this one interaction with her dad, where it's like, her dad's alive. And it's kind of, it's this like cheap way of getting us to care about the character, but it doesn't actually do anything to get us to care about the character. There's nothing that's worked for or earned. It's just this like quick plant. And Dominic West does fine in the role, but it's kind of just this quick thing that's supposed to get us attached and doesn't actually achieve
yeah,
that.
I think that Alicia Vikander and Dominic West are doing what they can with what they're given, and maybe do a little bit better than it deserved as far as the emotional impact. I will say him talking to himself about how she's just a hallucination and she'll go away, that was maybe the most emotional moment of the film, like hearing him say that,
yes.
Because there was like a kind of a visceral feeling to that. But
I would say that was maybe the most like unique element of the movie is like that scene. And part of that is because so often it's like, he sees her and he would be like, Laura, my Laura. Oh, it's so good to see you. But it's like, you feel that like 7 years where he hasn't seen her and has been on this island
right.
by himself.
But the problem with his character is that, so he leaves her voluntarily. The opening voiceover, he like basically says like, sorry, Laura, I love you, but I have to go do this. And then you're like, okay, that's kind of a jerk move, Dad. And you're never really shown that he's someone who's worth being missed as much as she misses him.
Right. Like our biggest clue into that is like, he has a nickname for her and he tells her, I love you, with like the two kisses to the finger and then the fingers to the forehead. It's like kind of this like weird connection type thing that doesn't really make sense, but it's like, I think it's meant to play on like your relationship to your parents.
Yeah, I think,
which is, you know,
I think if they, the, I mean, you know, basically the only mention of her mom here is seeing her name in the crypt with the date, with an end date. So, you know, she's dead, obviously, and has been dead for some time. But I think that even showing like the presence of mom and some of those flashbacks would have added some emotional weight to this relationship. Because I think that something, I mean, it could very well be and makes a lot of sense that the reason father and daughter are so close is because mom died very young, you know? And that's something right. that we can...
And I think that's the general background. And that's the other thing I talked about earlier. I remember from playing one of the video games, I think her mom did die very young. And it was just kind of her and her dad for the longest time.
So yeah, so there's something that could be explored there to kind of add weight to the relationship with her and her dad. And it ultimately feels like right. her dad exists for two reasons. One, to give emotional depth to the character, and two, so that someone can blow up the tomb that we don't need in a later movie.
Right. But bringing up her dad brings up something that we talked about earlier, which is, you know, the Indiana Jones-ness of this movie. And even in, you know, The Last Crusade, you have Sean Connery coming in to add a little bit of context to Indiana Jones towards that plays perfectly. This feels a little bit forced. What do you think of the comparison of this to Indiana Jones?
I think that it's sort of not fair because Indiana Jones is the original and the best of this kind of thing. There's only so many different ways that you can rob a grave or do archaeology and it be interesting, you know? But I do think this sort of feels like all pieces of all three Indiana Jones movies are in it. Here and there we've got like the slave labor, we've got the trials and tribulations and in the tomb.
He actually raids more than one
right,
tomb.
That's true.
There's only one tomb raider.
That's
in
true.
This film.
He's a habitual tomb raider. He's digging all kinds of stuff up. I will say this does have maybe a more or a potentially they didn't quite get there, but the potential for a more interesting villain than Indiana Jones ever had, which the Indiana Jones villain was always just like Nazis.
Did you like Walton Goggins in this movie?
I thought he did a good job. I think that they could have spent about 4 or 5 more minutes on him and he would have been very interesting. He doesn't.
Right. It was once again the example of like using family to get us to care about the character. It's like he has a family that he hasn't seen in 7 years and he just wants to go home to them and he's just trying to do his job for the company.
Right.
And it's like, give me more of like a motivation
right.
than that. Like, why did he volunteer for this in the
exactly.
first place?
Exactly. Like, does he think he's doing something good? Like, overall, does he paying some kind of debt? Did he have to, like, trade his 7 years of labor for his daughter's cancer treatment? Like, give me a little bit more. Because the basis was there for a good, interesting villain. But we didn't
right.
quite get all the way there.
Yeah, and I think if the movie wasn't so obsessed with the action scenes, which the action scenes are great. Maybe not great. They're good. A lot of them are good. The jungle chase / like river plane fight in the night type sequence was great.
I didn't love the parachute CGI.
You didn't love the parachute CGI?
It felt weird to me.
It felt like a weird out for that scene. Like I would have rather, because that feels like her getting away with luck. Rather than her using her skill, the fact that she was able to like grab a parachute, the parachute was still able to work. It wasn't completely ripped and it was able to kind of like,
I will
save
say,
her instead of her,
the
like
thing that seemed the most far-fetched in this entire movie to me, which I understand it's a movie based on a video game. It's got that comic book feel. I can suspend disbelief all day long. This is great. I loved it. But her holding on to a parachute that's been deployed just with her arms, I don't see how someone could do that. The force going
Trevor,
the opposite
no,
direction.
She's jacked.
I don't know. That's like the least believable thing in the whole movie to me. Even the instant plague was more believable.
The Himiko yeah. instant plague? Yeah. I'm with
anyway,
you on that
although one. I did like, and I think Matt Zoller cites from Roger Ebert Com pointed this out. The time when she's on the plane wing and it starts creaking and cracks and she goes, "Really?" was like a very nice Indiana Jones type moment of just the like,
right,
like this situation is so ridiculous. You have to just kind of laugh at yourself for a half second because this is insane. You're on a rusted out plane at the top of a waterfall in an island that may or may not have existed 6 hours ago.
What did you think about the characters overall? I like a lot of the characters in this movie, but my biggest problem is Daniel Wu's character of Lu Ren, who just feels completely unnecessary.
Yeah, he's kind of this weird stereotype of a drunk boat captain. I think Daniel Wu is good in the role. It is bizarre that he didn't even have like a slight accent. He sounded very American in this.
Right. He almost at times sounded British.
Yeah, that was a little weird, but I mean I liked him in the role. I think they either needed to make him less interesting or more interesting. His transformation, like a lot of the things in the first half of this movie, is just way too easy. She goes looking for clues about where her dad is, and suddenly it takes her 15 minutes and she finds an email from a guy in Hong Kong, so she just flies to Hong Kong. And she just she has to beat up some little brats at the docks, and then she just happens to find the right boat she was looking for, and her life is sort of saved, although I think she would have gotten those kids in the end. Her life is sort of saved by this guy who is 1 second alert enough to fire a gun without shooting anyone, and 5 seconds later just passes out completely wasted. So yeah, his character is thin. The connection of their dads is something there, but I almost feel like it should have been a little more difficult. They should have argued more, or I don't really know. He should have been more angry at her about taking him to this island where people are all going to die probably. Like, it was just a little too easy. But I do think, I mean, he's obviously going to be the sidekick in the future. That's where this character is going.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Daniel Wu is great in this character, but I don't think that the character of Lu Ren adds anything to the movie. I think if you take this character out, replace her with some unseen boat captain, and you have a cutscene where she ends up agreeing to pay him, you know, money, and you show her being like, money, and him being like, okay, then we get more time to focus on the actual character of Lara Croft, and then that maybe creates more of an attachment to her for us. But I feel like so much of this in the movie is, you know, her attachment with her dad, which is great, but we never get to see her for her until the very, very end of the movie where she, you know, 300 kicks Walton Goggins' character into the pit of 1,000 souls or whatever it's called. And, you know,
that's plague finger in his mouth.
Fine. Yes, with a decaying finger in his mouth, giving him an insane virus. We don't ever really get like her motivations for herself. It's always like her dad's story or like this other person. And it's never like, I don't feel like we ever get to see her stand on her own.
Yeah. I think it doesn't really become her story until her dad is infected.
Right. And so much of that is, I get this as an origin movie of telling like how she became who she was, but we talk about this movie standing on its own, you know, away from its comic or away from its video game adaption. But this movie also needs to stand on its own, not in contingent with future films. This film needs to be able to say, like, I'm a good film without having to watch future films and then retroactively go back and be like, man, what that film sets up is great. Like, I wish this film was more concerned with giving us a full story than just giving us an origin and a setup for an entire franchise.
Right. Yeah, it kind of just felt like a pretty interesting prologue to something that's coming.
Right. Like, this could have easily been like the comic book prequel lead in to the actual movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is frustrating because like Alicia Vikander is great in this role. I hope that she gets another chance to play this. The movie's doing, you know, fine at the box office. It's doing well overseas. I'm curious what ends up happening with other films down the road, if they end up greenlighting this, if Warner Brothers and MGM go, okay, this is worth it, like, let's keep doing this, we've got a good you know, foot in the door here, let's keep building on this, or if they kind of drop this by
the
wayside.
I think we'll get at least one more, and I think that with maybe a little bit better fleshed out story, I think that it could be good. I mean, I think that Uthog shows that he's got an eye for action and how to move the camera for action, and did a great job with that. I thought the bike chase scene at the beginning was fantastic and unlike almost anything I've seen in a movie before. It was a very unique kind of thing.
Have you seen Premium Rush?
I have not seen Premium Rush, actually.
Because it's a whole movie of that bike
scene. Okay, well, let's pause right here and I'll go watch that.
Also stars future honorable mention Michael Shannon.
Oh, yeah. So I thought the bike chase was kind of a fun little intro to kind of who the character is. I think that that shows a lot more about the character than a lot of the other things that happen later in the movie. I think that's the bike scene is important because it gives you a reference that these things are happening in a real world, not in like a weird fantasy world. I think it helps to ground everything a little bit for you.
Yeah. And that was the weird twist at the end was like, this movie's constantly, in the realm of like, okay, is this a real curse, like a real sci-fi type fantasy thing? Or is it like some real world explanation? And I was kind of like disappointed by this, like, and it was set up earlier in the film of the, like the whole, you know, reality is sometimes based in the rumors, or, I don't remember what the exact words that they use are, but you know, the facts are somewhere in between the two sides of the story, whatever it is that they use. But it's such a weird, like halfway answer or like halfway thing that it just kind of felt like a like, well, we don't want to disappoint anybody, so here's this meet in the middle type thing.
Well, I think that it's maybe one way that these films can distinguish themselves from Indiana Jones a little bit is to not really go the supernatural route.
Right.
And this is not supernatural. You know, we're kind of led to believe that it is, and it feels like it's heading that way, but it's really just like a one in a million worst case scenario biological disaster kind of thing. Which I think is, I mean, hopefully I think is setting the tone for the whole series. Because I think that there are times in Indiana Jones where the supernatural parts are kind of a cop out a little bit, kind of deus ex machina, or however I just butchered the Latin. I think that that's interesting. I think that another important moment for the character was that Lara is the one that kind of figures out what's going on, and I think that I said earlier her dad getting the disease, but I think that's also kind of the big turning point where she realizes that she can do this and she can stand on her own because she's figured this thing out that no one else has.
Yeah. And that's an important moment, at least for me, because so much in this movie, they tell us things, about her intelligence. Like she remembers some quote from Shakespeare early in the movie and they're like, wow, I just remember things.
Uh-huh.
Instead of like giving us more into that throughout the movie. And so that was an important moment where like that tied back in later on, that if that wasn't there, that I think that beginning would have felt more hollow, but because of that, the beginning kind of gets that full arc of like, cause that's the thing is like Laura Croft is a great, like physical character. She's like super talented in like rock climbing and in like gunfighting and bows and all these sorts of weapons. But at this like same time, she's whip smart. And so I was waiting for them to kind of portray that the entire time to give us some sort of like view into her mind. And I think in that moment we get that. And that was very well done.
Yeah, I think my favorite moment of this film and the most humanizing moment of it is the way, and something that we don't get in films like this that's very unique to this one, is the way that she deals with killing someone for the first time. And you can tell that she's not comfortable with it and that it kind of hits her with this weight. And I think that they could have even done more with that. as mm-hmm. it with the character, and because it's almost like she deals with it and then she sees her dad and we move on to something else and now she kills people because she has to. I think there could have been a little bit more to that, but I think that that is an interesting layer to what happens in this film.
Yeah. Okay, so one last little thing is let's talk quickly about cinematography. And you kind of already hit on the fact that the VFX aren't great, and that's concerning. My biggest problem with the cinematography is that they don't utilize, like, there's scenes where she's running where I'm waiting for them to give us, like, some video games are all one long continuous tracking shot. It's all this one continuous motion where we're either have the character's POV or we have a third person view of them from behind as they're in the action. And I was constantly waiting for them to give us, like, that scene where she's running out of the tomb. I was waiting and I was like, this is the perfect opportunity to do it, for them to give us, like, one long tracking shot over the shoulder of her as she runs on this. And there's never, like, I feel like in that respect, there's so much like, let's stick to a movie instead of looking at it and being like, what would a video game look like in this moment? And then going with what that would actually be.
Yeah, I'm always game for more tracking shots, so definitely. I will say that she, Alicia Vikander, is well on her way to Tom Cruise level running. She's fantastic at running in this movie.
Great runner. She plays the role, the physicality of the role, she does incredibly well. Like, there's never a time where she's running or throws a punch or shoots a bow that you're like, that doesn't look natural. She's very natural in the elements of the physicality in this
movie. And unlike
incredible.
Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider, who doesn't fit the role believably, she's actually wearing long pants and not shorts while she's raiding tombs.
Yes.
Which, you know, is just practical. Yep.
That's 100% not a fanboy thing that they dreamed up just for the sake of a video game and having a character to stare at. But yeah, video games and movies, I guess, have come a long way since the creation of the character. Let's go ahead and get into our ratings for Tomb Raider.
I'm going to give this a 2 out of Trinity and give it kind of in that the B-minus range. A fun, good, solid movie. I think that it sets up a series well. I think that there is a potential for a fun series here. Alicia Vikander is great. And yeah, I liked this movie.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a B for me. It's a solid action film that I like, I think is interesting. Would I actively like pursue it again? Maybe not, but I had a great time watching it and it was fun. And yeah, it hits a lot of the notes that I'm looking for kind of out of an action movie. And hopefully sets up, you know, maybe what could be a great franchise. So we'll see. Let's go ahead and get into our content of the week, though. Trevor, what is your content?
I'm pretty sure if Jake was here, he would recommend the video game Rise of the Tomb Raider, which I think he's talked about before on here. It's the most recent iteration of the video game, and it's on Xbox One, 360, and PS4. And it's won a lot of awards. It's been well reviewed. I know Jake really likes it. It's something that I'm considering checking out after watching this movie. So I guess things work the opposite way too. I also want to recommend a show that we made fun of a few months ago for winning a Golden Globe instead of Master of None, and that show is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Prime, and it's actually a very good show. It's not as good as Master of None, but I can forgive the Globes a little bit because it's a lot of fun. It's very funny. Rachel Brosnahan, who you may know from House of Cards, is the lead role, and she's great in it. Tony Shalhoub is her dad, who's hilarious. It's a little bit kind of HBO-y in its content, especially with language. Amazon has no disclaimer whatsoever when you click on it and start watching it, so just kind of know that with the content and everything. Don't watch with the kids around or something like that. But I think it's a funny show. It's got good, interesting characters. It's heartwarming. It's from Amy Sherman Palladino, known for Gilmore Girls, Bunheads, etc., etc. And it's got that kind of quick, snappy dialogue of Gilmore Girls, but is a much, much better show overall.
Whenever somebody says etc., all I can think of is the theater teacher from Community going, etc. Did you just pronounce etc.? Okay, I'm going to recommend some of my favorite movies that feel like video games but aren't based on any video games. So I broke them up into two categories, and there's 8 films. I know that's ridiculous, but I'm just going to run through them. Actually, there's 8 films. There's 8 films. I'm just going to run through them quickly. So there are films that actually incorporate video game-esque elements, like Scott Pilgrim, Wreck-It Ralph, or Edge of Tomorrow / Live, Die, Repeat, starring Tom Cruise, that all kind of incorporate these video game-esque elements. And then there's films that feel video game kind of in the action, like The Raid, Dread, John Wick, Kong Skull Island, Pacific Rim. So any of those 8 films, I think, are well worth your time. All better video game movies than any of the video game movies we've gotten so far. So check those out. But that's all we have for now. If you've enjoyed listening to us, then please go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review us, and go and share us with your family and friends. That's the best way for you to show us your appreciation of the podcast. If you want to know more about us, then you can go visit our website at popcornoptional.com. If you want to interact with us more, you can find us on Twitter at Popcorn Optional, or we're on Facebook at Popcorn Optional. My name is Cameron Salina. You can find me online at 321CamiTime. Trevor, where can we find you online?
You can find me online on Twitter, Instagram, at TurboTrevor. I've also, in 15-minute snippets, been watching the Emoji Movie during my lunch, and I'm live-tweeting a bit of that. So check that out at the Popcorn Optional Twitter. It's awful.
And we will get Trevor's full review of that in a future podcast once he has finished with all 15-minute segments. you can find Jake online at jakebrown.tv. We'll be back next week with another review, but until next time, we hope all of you have a great week, watch some movies, and in the words of the great Michael Scott, we will be back ASAP as possible.
Y'all be good now.